late at night in Moscow. It's 10:30, so if I fall asleep, don't mind. But I hope I will not. So I was asked to speak on this topic of rules, regulations. And this is an important topic because we all follow certain rules. And it can be very beneficial and it can be very destructive as well. Rules is a very tricky thing. And if we approach the rules in our life in improper way, the effect will be destructive. In general, following the rules is very good, but at the same time we can see that all this sort of fanatical accepting, blind accepting, acceptance of the rules and so on and so forth is very detrimental for spiritual growth and for human development. There are so many cases when people were accepting rules blindly. So I will speak a little bit about this important topic, which is quite closely connected with the topic started by me this morning. And there is a very close connection, so I'm grateful to the organizers to give me this topic. So I'll read one verse from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's from the 19th chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, verse 177. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. So again, this is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 19. The Lord instructs Srila Rupa Goswami in the text number 177. Sadhana Bhakti Hoite Hoi Rati Ra Udaya Rati Gadha Hai Letar Prema Nama Kaya. And translation of this Bengali verse. By regularly rendering devotional service, one gradually becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the attachment is intensified, it becomes love of God. Purport. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu gives the following information about sadhana bhakti. Kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhava sa sadhana bhida. Nitya siddhasya bhava sya prakatyam hridi sadhyata. The process of devotional service beginning with chanting and hearing is called sadhana bhakti. This includes the regulative principles that are intended to awaken one to the devotional service. Devotional service is always dormant in everyone's heart. And by offenseless chanting of the holy names of the Lord, the original dormant Krishna consciousness is awakened. This awakening of Krishna consciousness is the beginning of sadhana bhakti. This can be divided into many different parts, including faith, association with sadhus, initiation by the spiritual master, engagement in devotional service under the instructions of spiritual master, steadiness in devotional service, and awakening the taste for bhakti, devotional service. In this way, one can become attached to Krishna and his service, and when this attachment is intensified, it results in ecstatic love for Krishna. The word rati is explained in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as follows. Vyaktam masrinate vantar lakshyate rati lakshanam mumukshu pratibrimtinam chedbhavet esha ratir nahi. When the tenderness of the heart is manifested, there is rati, or attachment. But those who are interested in being liberated from material bondage will not manifest this tenderness of heart. This attachment is not like material attachment. When one is free of material contamination, attachment for God or Krishna and His service awakens, and it's called rati. In the material world, there is no attachment. There is attachment for material enjoyment, but this is not rati. Transcendental rati, spiritual rati, can be awakened only on the spiritual platform. Ecstatic love for Krishna prema is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as follows: Samyan masrinita svanto mamatva tishayan kitah bhavaksa eva sandratma buddhai prema nigadhyate. When the heart is completely softened and devoid of all material desires, and when one's emotional feelings become very strong, one becomes very much attached to God, to Krishna, and such purified emotion is known as pure love. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Goravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshutarine Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Ajanulambita Pujokana Kavadatu Sankirtanaya Kapitarao Kamalaya Taksha Vishwambaro Dvijavaro Yugadharma Palu Vande Jagat Priya Karo Karuna Avataro Yandah Pravishya Mama Vachim Mam Prasuptam Sanjeevaya Takila Shakti Darah Svadhamna Anyamsya Hasta Charana Shravana Tvagati Pranam Namo Bhagavate Purushaya. So in this verse and purport, a very important point is being made. Sadhana is a very prominent characteristic of all Eastern tradition, and specifically Vedic tradition, Hindu tradition, one can call them. That's a regulated practice which is supposed to bring us to a certain goal. Sadhya is the goal, sadhana is the process. And when we speak about sadhana, we should always keep in mind sadhya. Because sadhana without sadhya is meaningless. The process without the goal toward which it is aimed is useless. We may do something very diligently and very actively, but if it doesn't bring us to the desired goal, it's useless. So, and sometimes, strangely enough, we speak about sadhana. One should get up early, very early, too much early. The earlier the better. But what is the goal? It becomes, by natural process, that's how our mind works, by natural process, it becomes the goal in itself. We somehow rather tend to lose the goal to which it is intended originally, and the following the rules becomes the goal in itself. We just should follow the rules by all means, and you know, look how great I am, I follow everything. For what? So the very important point which is being made here in this verse, and specifically emphasized in the purport, is that the goal of sadhana bhakti, and bhakti is the way of love as we know, is to soften the heart, is to make our hearts soft so that the very pure and elevated feelings of pure love will enter into our heart. these emotions, purified emotions, spiritual emotions, is the goal, ultimately. And we have to be very clear about it, because emotions is the most valuable thing in this world. Everyone is dying for emotions. Everyone wants emotions. But unfortunately, most of the people, they are after gross emotions. Emotions of gross sense enjoyments. It's a fun, right? You know, if you don't have any emotions, you will die out of boredom. You will just be... It's useless if there is no emotions. Some emotions should be there. And there is only choice which emotions you take, which emotions you really want. And most of the people, they after gross or, we can say, substantial emotions, which are really, you know, really gross. But unfortunately, by the arrangement of God, this sort of emotions, which everyone is after, very destructive. You know, lust is very destructive. It's degrading for the human heart. Anger is extremely destructive. Pride is also emotions which everyone is experiencing. It's also very destructive. It's destructive on many levels. It's destructive on physical level. Because if you experience anger, it basically means that the chain reaction in your mind, switches off certain physiological mechanisms, switches on, and different hormones are being produced. And basically, it's extremely destructive on many, many levels. On emotional levels, it's very destructive. On a mental level, it's destructive. On a physical level, it's very destructive. So this gross emotions, which we usually call sadari, six enemies of the soul, kama, krodha, loba, moha, mada, matsarya, lust, greed, anger, moha, illusion, or bewilderment when we are completely in euphoria, when we are elated or whatever, and mada, pride, look how happy I am and how successful I am. And ultimately, envy, when we feel that somebody is enjoying more than me. They are not by accident are called enemies of the soul. Because first of all, they completely kind of distract our attention from the real goal. Because one can be busy experiencing all these things, pride and you know, lust and greed and anger. It gives you some sort of artificial meaning in life. If you're experiencing this again and again and again, you feel that something is happening in your life. If you're always angry, you know, it's... there is a lot of things happening in your life, but ultimately, it's not good. Ultimately, it's not good. Again, on all the levels of human existence, you know, roughly speaking, on a physical level, on emotional level, on mental level, and on a spiritual level. On a spiritual level, and this is the most suicidal because it really distracts your attention to all these trivial experiences. It really, you know, completely preoccupies your mind. I want this, and, you know, if you don't get what you want, kama, then you experience what? Krodha, anger. I want my way. If it's not my way, then, you know, I will just smash and do. Or if you fulfill your desires, you become proud. Look how great I am. I'm the best. So this sixth thing, which are coming from our false identity, actually this is explained by Narottam Das Thakur. He says, he mentions these six things, and then he says, dambasaha. Damba means hypocrisy, or false identity, actually, or false pride. It's different than mada. Mada is just intoxication, pride in the sense of intoxication. But then there is dhamba. Dhamba means false identity. So it's all these emotions which we experience are coming from false identity, and they're not good. I recently was in one ashram together with Taras and his wife. And they, in this ashram, they call this these emotions the same sort of thing, but they also list these seven things, and the six emotions and the dhamba, the false pride. Thank you. Anyway, what I want to say is that. As Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, this sort of emotions, they harden the heart. We may experience these emotions again and again and again, but the result is that the heart becomes very hard. We become really cruel, ultimately. If somebody, and that's perhaps one of the most horrible effect of this so-called sense enjoyment. People who are after sense enjoyment, they ultimately become cruel and they commit all kinds of sinful activities and even criminal activities to get the sinful the enjoyment. And they want more and more and more, and they never satisfied. This is the point. You never can be satisfied by all these experiences. You can only, you know, pour the ghee in the fire, and the fire will become more and more and more. Desires will be more and more and more. No satisfaction is found in this. And the heart becomes hard because you want it by all means. And the more you entangled in this, the more you want it, and the more cruel you become, and the more hard your heart becomes. So, basically, the path of spiritual development is to purify the heart. But not just purify the heart. Sometimes on a certain spiritual path it is said that, you know, you have to purify your consciousness. But even purification of the consciousness is not the ultimate goal. When you have pure consciousness, pure heart, pure consciousness, then the real goal is that when you are able to experience elevated, subtle emotions, emotions of love, which starts from compassion, from, you know, there are so many things which are much more fulfilling than these gross emotions. But unfortunately, if one on a certain level of spiritual development, he cannot appreciate these more subtle emotions and enjoyments which are coming from these emotions. And ultimately, according to the scriptures, to the Vedic scriptures, and specifically according to Srimad Bhagavatam, the most fulfilling emotion, the completely overwhelming emotion, spiritual emotion, is the emotion of love of God. And this is this emotion or this experience is so overwhelming that one is ready to forsake everything else. There are so many examples in the history of spiritual history of the world in different religious traditions when the people start in the very beginning start experiencing these emotions of love of God, they forget everything else. They completely renounce everything else. Not artificially, not because they just want to renounce, but that is it's naturally because it's incomparable. You can't compare it. It's so fulfilling and so valuable and so enjoyable, one can say, that everything else is pale in comparison with this. So, and when we do our sadhana, first of all, we have to really understand that the sadhya or the goal of sadhana is to have pure heart, tender heart, soft heart, And in this soft heart, the experience of love becomes natural. If the heart is soft, like, for example, mother has a natural love for a little child. And her heart is so soft. And she cries because of love. Today I had a very interesting experience. We had lunch conversation with Jayadvaita Swami. And whoever knows Jayadvaita Swami, externally he looks very tough and stiff. And today he started speaking about some of his services, especially in New York. And all of a sudden he started crying. He started crying, saying that, speaking something about the protection of religious organization and something like this. And from the tears, all of a sudden, I was shocked by seeing, the tears started gliding in his cheeks. And his voice choked. And the tears is actually a manifestation of the soft heart. When you're grateful to somebody and you're so grateful, then you're crying. It means that you have soft heart and you experience something very advanced and elevated in this moment. That's a very, subtle emotion which is fulfilling, as I said. So ultimately, that's what is being explained several times in the purport by Srila Prabhupada, that actually this is says here, this says in the very verse itself, Rati gadha hoilita prema namakai sadhana bhakti hoiti hai rati raudai. By doing sadhana bhakti, you experience rati, and rati means attachment. But one should not mix this attachment with material attachments. Material attachments, again, makes one's heart hard. Material attachments turns one into a beast, ultimately, if you're too attached. But the spiritual attachment gives you generosity in heart, gives you purity in heart, gives you all this very elevated experiences which are there. And, coming to our topic, the main topic, that's just the introduction to the topic, we have to really understand if we're doing sadhana bhakti. We're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. And we experience that our heart becomes really not very nice. And we always try to find faults in other people. And sometimes it happens. I mean, oftentimes it happens. Something is going wrong. Something we are doing wrong. If we are doing something properly, the result should come. If we are doing yoga, there is certain lakshanas, certain signs by which we can understand that something is going right. Doing yoga, at least your body should become soft. That's the goal of yoga, initial goal of yoga. Ultimately, the heart should also become soft, the consciousness becomes soft. But it starts from the spine. It's a good practice. But what I want to say, I just want to say that any sadhana which we do, any regulated practice which we do, any rules which we follow, we should not become a fanatical follower, which is a very likely to happen. When we come to any path or any religious practice or any spiritual practice, this danger is there that we become follower for the sake of being a follower. And I want to explain a little bit about this phenomenon because it's important for us to understand why it happens so often. The religions are known all over the world for breeding fanatical people, for breeding people who are just blind and who just proud You know, it's funny because all religions, they glorify humility. They glorify softness of the heart. But somehow or other, they only breed proud fanatics. How come? Why it is so? Why this mismatch is there? Why, you know, there is a practice which is supposed to make you a humble servant, to serve others, to help others, to be grateful, and so on so forth. But result is oftentimes, very oftentimes, too much more often to think that this is just an accident. You know, if it would happen once or twice, you know, you might say, yeah, little mistake is there. But it seems like there is some serious mistake in this whole phenomenon. So, and we have to really be very clear about it. And, you know, there is no exceptions to this rule. I've seen many spiritual organizations, and everywhere you can see very proud people who say, only we are right, everyone is wrong. You know, this very statement is really wrong. You know, I have a friend of mine, and he was joking once. You know, he said, everyone is saying that everyone is wrong, only we are right. And we are not saying this, therefore, only we are right. He was just mocking this sort of attitude. Sometimes we are in this position. We say, yeah, we're the best because... So what happens actually when we come to any spiritual organizations or spiritual enterprise, so to speak, or spiritual path? I was speaking this morning about these two types of faith, two types of shraddha. And if our faith is conventional, if it's coming from social interactions and social pressure, then the faith is really, it's not internalized. It's not something which becomes a part of my existence. It's still external towards me. It's coming from the society, and I want to be a part of this society. And because I want to be a part of this society, I follow the rules. And for me, really, the faith is not a free movement of my heart. It's not really vritti of my consciousness. It's not really something which is naturally and spontaneously is existing in my heart and regulating my life. But it's something which is still external in relationship to me. You know, some people, usually it works like this. You know, there are some big people, they have dandas, or sometimes they have big crosses or big heads, and, you know, and they know better. They know the truth. So this attitude, sometimes people, that's what they think the faith is. They think that the faith is, I believe that somebody knows this. That somebody knows the truth. I don't know the truth, but I follow. It's sort of blind following attitude. In Sanskrit, there is a proverb, a saying, Gadalika Nyaya. It basically means the logic of herd of a sheep. You know, sheep, they're blind followers. They just want to follow. It doesn't matter where they follow. They can follow to slaughterhouse very happily because they are just sheep. And, you know, congratulations, sometimes we behave in the same way. Sometimes we come And we think we accept something blindly, and we just want to belong to a certain society, and we say, and they know better, and this and that. We don't even, so to speak, set this goal. I want to realize this truth myself. We take it as a dogma. And this dogma, what happens after that, when there is some dogma or some truth which is not internalized, which is not coming from our heart, which is remaining external to ourselves, it becomes a very cruel force in our life. It really spoils our life. Really spoils. Someone very sincerely trying to follow everything. He doesn't know why he's following, but he's forcing himself, and he doesn't feel any satisfaction inside. There is no satisfaction coming from inside, but still, and you need some satisfaction. How you get satisfaction? You get satisfaction by being proud. I'm the best. I am the only one who is following. Everyone else is fallen. Everyone goes to hell. I'll go to heaven and have my nice life there, you know. And you know, but because I want some satisfaction now, then how I get this satisfaction? By pushing other people down, you know. And by saying, or trying to force them to follow the way I follow. You know, I'm miserable, everyone else should become as miserable as I am by following these four regulative principles. The hell with them. I mean, I've seen this attitude again and again and again. People, because they don't really understand why they follow, what is the goal, they don't have experience, and moreover, neither do they do have experience, nor they even really believe that they will have the experience. It's a very common attitude that, you know, there are some people, they're special, you know, they're there, four of them. They have this love of God, and who are we? We're just small people, you know. We'll do our little thing here somewhere in the corner, and you know. But no, it's not for them. It's for us. This practice is for us, and it's real. It's only. It really depends on our attitude. If the attitude is right. If we do whatever we do with a very conscious mind, with extreme consciousness, applying it diligently and sincerely, conscientiously in our life, then it will happen. The heart will become soft and we will start crying. And ultimately we will only cry, you know. It will not happen so soon, so don't worry. But ultimately, all this, and it's not, again, it's not artificial, as it is said in the definition of sadhana bhakti, is that nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam hridi sadhyata. It's something, it's a hidden treasure which is there in our heart. Nitya siddhasya bhavasya, this bhava, this love of God. It's dormant in everyone's heart. It's nitya siddha. It's nitya siddha literally means existing always. It's there. And we all feel that I need love. Sooner or later, everyone feels I need love. I don't need anything else. You know, if you don't have anyone to love, and if nobody loves you, life is empty, useless. You know, if people, old people, when there is nobody around them whom they love, then they love the, you know, the flowers, and they water the little flowers in the pots, or dogs or whatever. You know, we need this emotional exchange. Is an essential part of consciousness. We can't avoid it. But we have to really understand the path, how to unlock this treasure house of real love, which is there in the soft heart. And again, sadhana is for this, and we have to really understand that sadhana is for this, and it can be experienced, this prema, elevated state of consciousness, when the consciousness is fully blown. It's actually very interestingly described in our scriptures that the consciousness is like a bud of a flower. And at the beginning, it's kind of closed. But the path of spiritual development or spiritual practice is for blossoming the heart. And this is literal. Those yogis who see the subtle reality, they can see that the heart starts blooming. It's expanding. When we experience these gross emotions, the heart becomes really shrunken. Shrunken. It becomes really shrunken, you know. And we experience it in a physical level also. When we are fearful, you know, we become like this. Why? Because the consciousness is shrunken. It goes inside. But when we have these elevated emotions, the heart becomes more and more expanded. And this expansion of consciousness is actually the goal of spiritual development. And we have to really clearly understand that it's possible within one life. We shouldn't think that this is, you know, next life or in a few lives. That's a very common mistake. Sometimes we hear some very elevated descriptions, like here in Chaitanya Charitamrita, of great saints, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this case. And we think, nice story. But there is no use to write these stories if it's not applicable to us directly. We have to really understand. I want to now explain a little bit about this attitude. So, first of all, one point I made, important point, is that this improper attitude towards the rules, when we use the rules or religious practices to become proud, is coming from the wrongly formed face. When the face is not really internal, when it's still external in my life, and it's kind of, it's a damaging force, but I don't understand why I'm following this. Do I really need this? Is it really scientific, the whole process? Is it really scientific, or it's just some sort of sentimental, fanatical, descriptions. So this is one point. The next point, very important, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains very clearly, that we have to really understand that the path of bhakti can be followed by anyone, and it's a quick process, and anyone can experience it if he does everything properly. He says one life. Very quickly one can experience these sentiments. I had a very interesting experience once. We had Janmashtami celebration in our temple in Moscow. And so many guests came around, not as many as coming here to the manor, but still around probably 10,000 guests were there, and it was coming to the culmination of the whole event, the midnight. And it was very intense program. Near midnight, we started kirtan. And really, I mean, it was amazing kirtan. And I was going around. There was not so many people by that time, by 12 o'clock. Many people left, but still there were quite a few guests and quite a few devotees. So I was going around looking, and, you know, there was very nice feeling in my heart. And I was listening to kirtan, taking part, but I was watching people. And all of a sudden, somebody was patting me on the shoulder. And I looked back, and I saw one young man, for the first time I have seen him. I don't know, boy probably of the age of 20. And he says, I'm sorry, he told me. I'm sorry, you know, I'm for the first time here. And I don't know what's going on, but all of a sudden I started crying, and I'm crying and crying, and I don't know why. Can you explain to me why? Something is wrong with me? I looked at him and said, something is wrong with me. Everything is okay with you. There's nothing wrong with you. I'm not crying. You're crying. You know, and it's not just, again, artificial. It's a natural process. It's there. It's recorded. It's well recorded. It's a scientific process. We can achieve this elevated state if our attitude towards sadhana is right. And the right attitude is actually described by this very beautiful phrase which Srila Rupa Goswami, who is getting instructions here in this chapter from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which he described in Upadeshamrita, the nectar of instruction, niyama agraha, basically. And it's a very simple thing. Niyama agraha, as we know, have these two meanings, double meaning. Niyama means rules. Niyama means rules which we should follow, starting, you know, so many rules are there in any path, in any spiritual practice. And then there is agraha, and graha means to get. Graha means to hold, from Sanskrit. Agraha means not to hold, not to. So niyama agraha, if it's short a in the word agraha, means to neglect the rules. Niyama agraha, you know, I neglect the rules, I don't follow the rules. And but you can put long A in the beginning, niyama agraha. And it means a agraha. It's double negation, and double negations emphasize the original meaning of the word, according to the rules of Sanskrit. So agraha. Agraha means neglect. Yeah, I neglect the rules. Agraha means I too much stick to the rules, blindly. I just stick to the rules. I follow the rules for the sake of the rules, and I condemn everyone who doesn't follow the rules. So these two attitudes is a result of improper faith. This Lokika Shraddha about which, or this conventional faith about which I was talking this morning, is actually resulting very clearly, manifesting very clearly in our attitude towards the rules. And it goes as a pendulum. In the beginning, because of this because of this social, so to speak, socially induced, forced faith, in the beginning one makes a mistake which is called niyama agraha. One is very fanatical. Oh, yeah. Very katarnak bhakta. Tough bhakta. You know, gets up very early. You know, very fixed up. And very proud. You know, if it's a Kadashi, you know, I fast completely. Not a drop of water will come to my mouth. And, you know, I'm by the end of the day, I'm completely angry at everyone, starting with God. but I'm so austere, you know. I didn't take even a drop of water. Look how great I am. And I'm, you know, going around and telling, you know, look, I am fasting. Are you fasting? I'm fasting completely, you know. Look. So that's the beginning, yama agraha, when one, you know, tense. It's a tendency. Everyone was in this situation. And, you know, you try to do everything nicely. And then so after some time, you become senior devotee. And senior devotee means niyama agraha. You neglect the rules, you know. I know this. No problem. But boss is wrong. Boss is wrong. Boss is not understanding. I have to follow it, but I have to understand, why do I follow it? What is the reason? And it has to be natural, and I don't have to use, I shouldn't use, and my following, my very fact that I'm following as some preference point, as some, you know, as some point for arrogance, to be arrogant, or so this is all coming from not really deeply understood or scientifically understood nature of the spiritual path. And unfortunately, these mistakes are very common, and the pendulum goes like this, you know, from one extreme to another extreme, and we are never in the middle path, in the right path, when we are neither too fanatical nor too neglectful. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's very interesting. Please listen very carefully, because he explains, he gives a very beautiful example. He says, if you want to climb the ladder, then the simple process, which we all know, is first to be established firmly on one step, but then quickly go to another step, higher step. And then establish yourself very firmly on this step, and then go to another step, to another step. And he says the same rule is applied, should be applied to our spiritual practice. And the two mistakes which people do while they follow the spiritual practice, one mistake is that they want to rush too quickly. And he says, if you rush too quickly, if you try to, without establishing yourself firmly on each stage, and you try to reach very high, think, what will happen to you? He says, you will fall down to the point where you started from. And I've seen it many times. People, very sincerely, they really force themselves. Yes, yes, I have to do this. Yeah, love of God, kijai. Love of God by all means, by hook and by crook. And they really sincerely, and everyone looks at them and says, oh, they're so nice, they're so fixed up. You know, wait. Wait a little bit. You know, because they're trying, because they're approaching, and there is a very strong element of pride in this sort of attitude towards spiritual practice. By all means, I want to achieve very high goals, so that an implied meaning is that everyone will look at me and say, oh, how great he is, look. You know, there is this subtle pride is there. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if you try to do it too quickly, you will fall down to the initial stage. But then he says that then there is another attitude, you know, you just very slow, you say, I want to reach this goal, and then somehow or other you stay on this stage, and you know, you look there and you look back and you sit down and eat some prasadam. In the meantime, you know, I've seen it many times here. There is this steps there, this ladder, and so many people eating prasad. So So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he literally says, you know, if you're just, and this is another tendency which we have, the tendency to be in a comfort zone, to make minimum, the minimum which we can to remain within a certain society which we like, just minimum. Minimum 16 rounds. And unfortunately, this minimum never becomes anything else. Hardly 16 rounds, but minimum 16 rounds. sometimes when we give initiations, people come and say, I promise to you to chant 16 rounds. And I say, and if you chant 17 rounds, you will break your promise, right? You will become unfaithful. Your vows will not be fulfilled. You know, people, they have this tendency. I'll do minimum, not more than this, you know. Leave me alone. So that's niyama agraha, when one tries, you know, to follow very little. And another example which I sometimes give in this regard is the bicycle riding. You know, if you try to ride bicycle too quickly, then what will happen? You will fall. But if you try to ride the bicycle very slowly, what will happen? You will also fall. If it's too slowly, you will not be able to ride the bicycle. So the spiritual practice is like this. There has to be, and the rhythm, the speed, so to speak, it's individual. Somebody can do quickly. Somebody can apply it in a more gradual procession. But we should be sincere in this regard. It's another example which is quite vividly explaining this relationship to the rules which we follow of our sadhana is like doing some, you know, workout in a gym. You know, you can really kill yourself. And, you know, doing yoga, and you really can break your ligaments and everything else and damage yourself because of pride. Or you can do it very lazily, and again, there will be no satisfaction. The point, very important point, you know, we will get satisfaction when we get to the higher point of bhava. But while we are doing sadhana, then there is a very important way to obtain satisfaction is when we apply ourselves to sadhana in such a way that it's neither too damaging to ourselves over our head or over our capacities, neither too relaxed. You know, everyone experienced this. If you go to gym and you really did proper workout, not too much and not too little, then what you feel? You feel happy. There is some sort of freshness within your heart. And you very sincerely, and it's not artificial, it's not something imposed upon you, you feel very refreshed by this. Why? Because you did sincerely what you're supposed to do, what you wanted to do. And again, it's individual. It's not a unified rule. Everyone has different capacities according to the stages of spiritual development. But the point is that if we apply our capacities or our shakti properly, like there is a very strange saying now in India, yatha shakti tatha bhakti. It basically means, you know, I'll do whatever little I can. Yatha shakti tatha bhakti. You know, but if we really apply the shakti which we were given, the energy which is there, properly and sincerely, conscientiously towards the spiritual practice. The spiritual practice will bring you tremendous benefit. Tremendous benefit. If we really consciously, use or utilize these practices like Shravanam and Kirtanam, chanting mantra or doing other things, we will be always refreshed and very strong, both spiritually, emotionally, and even physically, if we do it in a balanced and a proper way. And that's coming when the faith is internalized. When you understand why you're doing, what you're doing, for what you're doing, what is the goal, and how it goes, what are the stages which you have to follow. Srila Prabhupada mentions the stages which you have to traverse in your spiritual path gradually, one after another, by increasing your commitment gradually to a level when your heart is more and more purified. So, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that, he gives this beautiful description how one should approach the rules, neither niyama agraha nor niyama agraha, not too slack, not too quick or too prematurely, intense. And then he says that one can achieve very elevated state of consciousness. And I mean, really, the power of the path of bhakti is amazing, really amazing. I've seen amazing things. So many people from, I have one acquainted. He told me, he chants many, many rounds. He sleeps only 2 hours a day now, for many years already. He told me his story. It's a very interesting story. He said, I was very degraded. I was really degraded. I was drunk all the time. I was just, I was going down and down and down, and there was absolutely no way to save me. And I was just watching what is happening with me, and I couldn't do anything. I was just, I felt that it's not good, but I was just totally, completely going down path. And nobody could stop me, even though I knew that it's not good, but it was happening like this. And then somehow or other he got a book, he developed some faith from the book, and he said, at one point, when I got the book and some faith came to my heart, he said, I made my chanting beats, and I started chanting, and he said, I knew that if anything can save me in this world, this is this. And he said, with this attitude, I started chanting, and I chanted the whole night, non-stop, for many hours, 8 hours or something like this. And by the morning, I found myself that I'm completely refreshed, and I wanted to chant more. And he started, and he said very quickly, within a few days, basically, I was out of all my bad habits and everything else. And, ever since he chants 2 lakhs a day, and sleeps just for 2 hours, and, and he says, you can't imagine. He said, in my language, there was no normal words, only bad words. Only foul language I used. You can't even understand whom I was. And I'm looking at him, he's effulgent. He's really impressive figure. So what I want to say is that path of bhakti is a very powerful path. It's really powerful path. The only problem is that we don't apply it so sincerely or conscientiously or properly. But if we do, according to our rules, according to our capacity, which will be increasing gradually. Then we will see very miraculous things in our life. And the most miraculous thing is that we become happy. The heart will become full. Not empty heart which always begs something, but very nice, happy heart. Expanded heart. expanded consciousness. So this is a few things which I don't think I should say anything else. But if you have a few questions, I mean, it's again, yeah. I didn't tell. Last thing I will say. I started saying about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He said that if you follow the rules properly, then very quickly you will attain Krishna Prema. Then he says, but if you follow the process of bhakti the same way as a dead fish is floating in the river, then don't expect that you will very quickly experience anything else. And, you know, when I read this, comparison with the dead fish floating in the river, you know, a very vivid kind of example. There's some dead fish which is somehow or other hopes to get to heaven. But it is already dead long ago. And I kind of, you know, it rang the bell. It reminded me something, you know. Sometimes we can see that some people, they come very sincerely in the beginning to spiritual path, then after some time, because of the misapplication or some mistakes which they do, the whole fire is going off, and one just waits when he will die, as if death will bring some change of consciousness. That's a very common mistake which I have seen again and again and again in many religious traditions. People think, you know, I follow this from this to this, and then somehow or other when I die, there will be some drastic change. But we know that death doesn't bring change. It only fixes whatever, only sadhana can bring change. If you apply sadhana in your life, the change will be there in your consciousness, in your heart. Death doesn't do this. Death only fixes the state of consciousness in which you die, and then you start your next life from the same state of consciousness which you achieved. Death is not a solution. It's not something, although sometimes people think like this, wrongly think. But sadhana is a solution. And but for that, we really have to understand how to apply rules in our life in a happy way, not to spoil our life with the rules, but to be happy bhaktas. Yes.
Mother, you mentioned new other 2 months necessarily following the rules. However, when we see our acharyas as like Haridas Thakur, Six Goswamis, or even Sanatana Goswami going around who works every day, whatever the age. When Krishna himself is asking to reduce chanting to Haridas Thakur, he said, no, no, the problem is with me, or something like that. How do we reconcile it? It is our acharyas.
Well, see, again, the sign of improperly following the rules is that you're following the rules, but you're not happy by this. Haridas Thakur, when he says that, no, I want to do this, it's not because he's just doing niyama agraha, but because he's just happy to do this. Sanatana Goswami was happy to go around Hill. They were happy. It's not some artificial thing. They were not forcing themselves to do it. They were just, because while doing this, they were experiencing something very elevated. And yes, maybe from the strict point of physical fitness, they were not fit to this sort of activity. But still, it's not really niyama agraha, because they were not forcing themselves to do this by some external sort of reason. It was coming spontaneously from their hearts, so it was not niyama agraha. It cannot be classified in this way. Yes, yes, Sundarananda.
I just heard this actually question pertains to this morning class. I just heard on the Mayavati Gaurantan. You mentioned, Jiva Goswami mentions about the Shastric Shraddha, that the propensity to sinful reaction, the sinful activity goes away, or the person who is situated in the Shastric Shraddha is not performing sense. I always had this dilemma about looking at the 9:30 verse in Bhagavad Gita, or the 11:14:18 of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Lord Himself says that somebody who has situated in the Krishna consciousness, firmly in Krishna consciousness, but performs in one of activity should still be considered a sadhu. So on one hand, we are hearing that somebody who is situated very strongly in Krishna consciousness can also perform sinful activity, but on the other hand, we are hearing from Jiva Goswami that
That's exactly the point what she makes. He says that if somebody has still has these sinful propensities, but still he is he has some faith in the process of Krishna consciousness, it means that his faith is not really of the highest level. What it means to have really properly formed faith. It means that your buddhi, your intelligence, your conscious mind, so to speak, is very strong, and it's connected with your ego. There is some alliance between your buddhi and your ego, I mean the proper ego. In other words, we have these four things. Citta, which is subconsciousness. Manas, which is emotional mind. Emotional mind, which is, you know, all the desires are there, thinking and willing is there. Then there is ahankar, the ego, our conception of who I am, in relationship to others, in relationship to this world, in relationship to God. And there is buddhi, the conscious mind which makes decision, perceptive mind, you know. So usually we are subservient to our emotional mind, manas, and we are trying to fulfill all desires which are there in the mind. But if our faith, what is faith? Faith is basically the understanding who I am in relationship to others, right? I'm this body, I belong to this country, I'm the husband of this wife, this and that. This is this conception of who I am, and it's faith, it's conventional. So if we have very strong understanding, ultimately, in the ultimate issue, I'm spirit soul. I am the particle of spirit. And I belong to God. And my relationship, my prime relationship is with Him. Yeah, I have other relationship. I should fulfill my duty. I should be nice. But ultimately, my eternal relationship is with God. If this this ego, this conception of who I am, is firmly established within my heart, then it influences my buddhi, my conscious mind, my intelligence. And then there is no question of being sinful. Because sinful means I'm fulfilling the base desires of my emotional mind. And my emotional mind influences my, but it can only influence myself, or I become subservient or to this emotional mind only because I don't have the proper understanding who I am. My understanding who I am is that somehow or other I will become happy by being this body, by being the senses, and satisfying the senses. If I understand that, I will not become happy. Of course, I should satisfy my senses, but this is not the way to be happy. This is not the way to live. If I understand this, then there is no question of committing sinful activities. So this specific verse of Bhagavad Gita, which is problematic for many people, they don't understand the meaning of this verse. It's simple. Apichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadureva samantavya samyakyeva sitohisa. Krishna, by saying this verse, he doesn't say to give the license to commit sinful activities on the pretext of bhakti. Apichet sudaracharo, even though somebody is doing some abominable thing, if he has complete conviction about myself, he should be considered saintly. No, this is the way to glorify bhakti. He says this, you know, even if he is still in this stage, you know, but he has the conviction. And then he says what happens. Kshipram bhavati dharmatma. Very quickly he becomes righteous. Kshipram bhavati dharmatma. Dharma becomes very quickly established in the heart. This is not to condone the sinful activities. This is just to glorify the power of bhakti. That's the meaning. This is a special alankar. This is a special, decoration or poetic decoration, poetic device, so to speak. If you want to stress certain points, you may say, even though, you know, you may say some hypothetical situation, which is not even very likely, but, you know, it's just emphatic construction. It's not to say that whoever has strong faith in Krishna should commit sinful activities from now on and still consider to be a saint. You know, this is total misinterpretation of the whole thing. That's the point.
Thank you for this fantastic explanation of 9:30. Never have said this before.
Yes.
Two questions. Still, now you asked that you said that, you know, we have to make our buddhi strong. How we can make that, like that complete conviction that I am a general servant of Krishna, though he hears from the time. How that can be established?
It's coming from association. It's coming from many things. You know, if we tackle this particular question, how to make our intelligence strong, there are so many things which can be done. You know, intelligence is the willpower, basically. It's certain shakti which we have, and you know, if we give certain vow and follow it strictly, then it develops this ability, this capacity of intelligence to take decisions and follow the decisions firmly. So one simple advice is just to give one very important point of Vedic culture is that people in Vedic culture, they were very firm. If they would give their word, they would never deviate. That was the, you know, Lord Ramachandra's specialty. He would say, one wife, one arrow, and one word. Eka patni, eka bana, whatever. So this is a rule for civilized people, and that has a tremendous effect on our internal development, because the buddhi becomes strong. You know, if we cannot do something, we shouldn't say that I will do this. Sometimes we, to please other people, we say, oh, maybe I will do this. And at the same time, we already know in the heart, I will never do this. that's not good. We have to be very honest and sincere. And if we say something, we will do this by all means. If we say, I will come at certain point, at certain time, I have to come at certain time. You know, we're too lenient. But if we become little strict to ourselves and honest and transparent, then gradually this conscious mind, conscious intelligence will develop. This is one thing. Another thing is to learn verses by heart. It also has very tremendous effect on developing our capacity to take the conscious decisions. And so many other means are there, but the most powerful means to develop our buddhi is to associate with people who have developed buddhi and to listen to them. If we listen to these people, very important things are happening within our consciousness which we don't even understand. We don't understand the magnitude and the scale of what is happening within our heart when we listen. Therefore, the first process of bhakti is shravanam, listening, hearing. So if we listen, it's not only what we understand on the intelligent level. There is much more profound things which is happening while we're listening to them. Because there are some learning process, unconscious learning process, some processes are taking place in our mind while we're listening to them. Therefore, listening is very important. You know. There was this funny story about one thief. The king of a little kingdom, his daughter was very saintly. And she said, my dear father, I will only marry a sadhu, a saintly person. So the king, he called all the sadhus from his kingdom to his palace to try to find a suitable bride to his daughter. And somehow or other the thief, and he wanted to give a lot of wealth and everything, and somehow or other a thief, he found out about this and he dressed up as a sadhu. He put orange clothes and some turban and he grew some beard and whatever it is. And he went together with other sadhus into the assembly, and the king entered and he said, "I have very nice daughter, and she wants to marry a sadhu, and I want to ask you, who out of you wants to marry my daughter?" And half of the assembly got up and left immediately without, so those who are wearing orange clothes, they just left. Other sadhus, they stayed, and, and the king went, and, everyone was saying, king went approaching one after another, and everyone saying, "No, I'm really sorry, but I'm not into it, and I don't really need it." He says, "I'll give you a lot of money." He says, "I don't need your money. I'm doing my sadhana, this and that." And they were saying, and this thief is waiting his cue, his turn. And he was listening. And then ultimately, the king came to the thief and said, "Maybe, my dear sadhu, maybe you marry my daughter." And he looked at him, and he told him, "Who do you think I am? I don't need your daughter. I will do my sadhana." So he listened too much. His mind changed in the meantime. Against his will, so that's what happened. So, listening or hearing is a very powerful tool to develop the intelligence. So be careful. Yes.
Maharaj,
Sometimes we hear that the Prabhupada said different things in regard to advancement in Krishna consciousness. I do remember there was one quote where he said you could become fully Krishna conscious in one second. Another time is where he suggested much more, perhaps arguably realistic for most people, a longer process that could take lifetimes. And I was wondering what your comments on that were in regards to the bicycle analogy. You know, how fast do we have to go or try to go, given that we can potentially become fully KSD very, very quickly indeed. Yet you've got this reality in our own conditions as well, which is slowing us down.
No, the normal path is a gradual path. There is no doubt about it. And it takes, you know, it takes time. And it's different for different people. Some people may have reached certain level of advancement in their previous lives, and they're starting from the point where they stopped. So it's different case by case. You know, there are certain things which can happen immediately. Like in Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the story of Maharaja Katvanga, where he got the news that he only had 45 minutes to leave. And very quickly he surrendered. But see, there are two things which we have to understand in this regard. As far as the surrendering process is concerned, it can be done very quickly. But that's not the ultimate goal. If it was all about surrendering to God, that can be done very quickly, but our ambition is higher. Our ambition is to get love of God. And that takes time. So that takes time, that takes association and so many other things which we have to do. So it again depends, but if we really want to strictly follow the process which is described specifically in Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, it takes time, and therefore adoshrada tatah sadhu sangha tatah bhajana kriya anartha nivriti syat. And it's interesting, the language which Rupa Goswami uses in this verse, he says first is shraddha, faith, then sadhu sangha, and I will explain it more tomorrow morning, association with devotees, then bhajana kriya, regulated practice, and then he says anartha nivriti syat. And syat means it can be translated as becomes or is, then anartha nivriti, but it has this the shade of the meaning is that it may be, like Hindi word shayad. Shayad comes from the syat, may be. So it may be, may not be, anartha nivriti. Because if you commit offenses in the meantime, and this deliberation of offenses is a specialty of bhakti path. Nowhere else you will see this understanding how offense is detrimental, how it creates obstacles on your spiritual development. So because it can be very quickly done, but because we are generally offensive, it takes time. But if we have proper association and proper guidance, it can be done rather quickly.
I ask this question about so you mentioned chitta manas.
Yeah.
We have our conditioning, which is primarily at the chitta level.
Yes.
As for the conditioning.
Yes.
And Mahaprabhu also says in Shastra, Yatodharana Maharaja.
Yes. 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 It's definitely gradual. Even Mahaprabhu says, Cheta Darpana Marjanam, this is the first stage. Your Chetana, your Chitta becomes gradually purified from excessive, unnecessary desires, Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam, the fire of suffering which is there becomes reduced, and then so on and so forth. The seven effects, seven stages are there. So it's a gradual process. And this will be the last point, any natural process is gradual. Whatever you take happening in the nature, in a natural way, it takes time. You know, you can't deliver your baby within 2 months. It requires 9 months, right? To carry the baby inside, because it's a natural process. Natural process means something very significant should be formed. In our consciousness, what does it mean? The changes which takes place in our heart or in our consciousness are very significant. It's actually very deep processes which are taking place within our heart. And during these processes, new formation is taking place. We are not equipped now, unfortunately, to love God. There is no means for this. Something should be formed, and some unnecessary things should be destroyed, should be cleansed away. So that takes time. That takes time. You know, sometimes people say, you know, I will teach you a language in 1 week. Is it possible? No, it's not possible. In 1 month? No, it's not possible. No. It's a cheating. So, because it's a natural process, something significant should be formed within. And spiritual development is like this. It's a very deep and profound process. Thank you very much. So that's the...